We welcome you to the first edition of Feltus and Kale, 1039, 1450, NHTalkRadio.com. Ken Kale and Dan Feltus with you. And Dan, I wonder how many consultants it took to come up with the name of this radio show.
I don't know. They had a focus group. They had a, spent a lot of money on it, I think. And it's really original. It really is.
But I don't mind that you get the top billing, because here's the way I look at it. I always like the more multi-syllabic name first. I think it sounds better that way. You know, like there's been radio shows. I mean, Felger and Maz are on the air.
Yeah,
there used to be a show called St. James and Kale. The multi-syllabic, title is better. Sounds better. I think it flows better. So yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind second billing, Dan. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I really appreciate that, Ken. I insisted it be named that way.
Okay. I know you did. It's in your contract. I know you have an ironclad contract here at the station. So anyway, exactly. Dan Feltus, Ken Kale, and Dan, we're going to get to know you a little bit better during the course of the next hour here on WKXL. We are certainly going to touch on the events of the day for sure. But would you really want to be governor right now?
Well, there are so many challenges facing the state. I think there are a lot of things that could be a lot better, a stronger New Hampshire that really puts working families first, that, you know, deals better with the vaccine rollout, that deals with the worst in a nation nursing home crisis in New Hampshire. And our numbers across the board, Ken, unfortunately, are much worse than, and by any metric, than Maine or Vermont. And the economy isn't working for people, working class folks. So there's a lot of challenges. Those are the kinds of things that, looking out for working people and working families. That's where I come from. I know we'll talk about that. And that's what I've focused on my entire life in public service. So, there are other ways to serve the public other than elected office too. And
Very true.
We're seeing it every day out there.
Well, for those who don't know, a couple of years ago, Dan became the youngest majority leader in the history of the New Hampshire Senate. And what we want to explore today is how he was able to achieve that and so much more. I think the perception of a lot of people, Dan, because you have been on the scene quite a while now, I think the perception is that you were born and raised in New Hampshire. But we know that that's just not the case.
We do know that, Ken.
Yeah, you know that, but do many people in the state know that?
Yeah, I grew up. I don't know. I grew up in Dubuque, Iowa, grew up in a working class household. My dad worked in a furniture factory, the same one, for 45 years, flex steel furniture factory. My mom, various part-time jobs while raising four kids, and graduated from the University of Northern Iowa, and then went and got a master's degree in public policy from Georgetown, and went back to Iowa, University of Iowa, for a law degree. And Ken, really, how I ended up in New Hampshire is between that first and second year of law school at the University of Iowa, I did legal aid actually in downtown Detroit, representing folks in legal assistance, and became interested in civil rights law and public interest law and helping people who need it most, who didn't have a voice in the process. And so coming out of law school, that's what I look for. We ended up in New Hampshire and working with New Hampshire Legal Assistance. It was an honor and privilege to work with them, a great statewide nonprofit legal services entity that really helps people, foreclosure prevention, evictions. Does its best to help people all across the state. So, then obviously out of that, spent about 10 years there, and then that opportunity to serve and make a bigger, broader, positive public impact, is why I ran for the state Senate to begin with in 2014. But, grew up in Iowa, Hawkeye fan, they're doing pretty good in basketball right now, Ken. They're 11-2.
Wow.
ranked fifth in the nation, NCAA men's basketball team. But, long line of workers, my grandfather on my mom's side, my mom's dad, he fought in World War II in the Pacific Theater. He was part of the army of occupation that went into Japan. And I came back from that war, Ken, and him and his family, his my grandmother and my aunt, they first lived in a tenement in the back of a house without running water or electricity, literally.
Wow. That's something.
They're that poor, and then they ended up ultimately building a house. Actually, him and his brothers, some of his brothers were bricklayers, and they built their own house. He worked in a union too. My dad worked in a union. A lot of my aunts and uncles worked in working class jobs and unions. So that's my upbringing. That's what I've looked out for, and that's what I've tried to look out for my entire life, working class folks.
Well, we'll learn more about Dan Feldes as we proceed on the program today. It's Feldes and Kale for the very first time, 103.9, 1450, nhtalkradio.com. Feldes and Kale here on 103.9, 1450, nhtalkradio.com. Dan Feldes, Ken Kale. We learned a little bit about Dan's background in our first segment today. How did you get from Detroit to New Hampshire? What brought you here to the Granite State? When you're working in Detroit and then in New Hampshire?
Well, I did an internship, summer internship between first and second year of law school in Detroit, but obviously went to law school full term in University of Iowa. So after graduating from the University of Iowa and working to help folks and including organizing a student trip down to New Orleans to help after Hurricane Katrina, half of us did legal aid work, FEMA paperwork, that kind of thing. The other half helped rebuild homes. I did all that work and then ended up, my girlfriend at the time was applying for jobs, got a job offer with New Hampshire Public Defender. I looked for jobs, got a job offer with New Hampshire Legal Assistance, had visited New Hampshire in the past. And, as they say, Ken, the rest is history.
Very true. Very true. So, Iowa. All right, home of the Iowa caucuses, and you moved to the first in the nation primary state. But beyond that, similarities between Iowa and New Hampshire, are they similar in terms of, the way the population is made up, the climate? Tell us a little bit about a comparison between Iowa and New Hampshire.
Well, there's more snow in New Hampshire. It's colder in Iowa, and it's also hotter. So that there's more of an extreme in terms of the temperature, but there's more snow in New Hampshire. The people, there's some remarkable similarities. Everybody likes to talk about that Midwestern work ethic, hardworking folks. But you see that in New Hampshire too. People are incredibly hardworking here, and don't want to seek the spotlight or seek fanfare. Kind of humble and down to earth. And so I think there's some similarities in the people of New Hampshire and in Iowa.
So you obviously still follow the Iowa Hawkeyes. You told us earlier they were 11-2. Growing up, did you play any sports?
I did. I played baseball and football predominantly. I dabbled in some other sports like soccer and wasn't very good at it, and track and field and wasn't all that great at that. I did some high jumping in track and field actually, and really just baseball and football. Ken, I was a long snapper in football.
Really? Yeah.
And it's a funny story how I ended up being a long snapper. So I was, you'll get a kick out of this, Ken. I was playing tight end, and all the receiving positions after practice would have to field additional punts and run 40-yard sprints and that kind of thing. And I said, look, I'm winded. That's a lot of work. I think I'll try snapping the ball instead. And I tried, and I just messing around, bent over the ball, snapped it back, perfect spiral right to the punter. And the coach was like, you got to be kidding me. You actually can snap. And then he's like, try it again. So I did it again, and another perfect spiral back to the punter. And that's how I became a long snapper, is avoiding wind sprints after practice. And so I did long snapping, played linebacker and tight end, sort of split end. And in baseball, I played different positions, including designated hitter. I was our high school team's version of Big Poppy.
There you go. Wow. Hey, how about that?
But not nearly as good.
Were you a left-handed batter?
No.
No.
So it's not even a very good analogy at all.
But long, I'm really impressed with the long snapping, because that is not an easy thing to do. That is, I know it's not an easy thing to do. And some guys have made it to the NFL strictly because of that ability. Like Steve DiAssi, for example, was a great long snapper for a long time with the Giants. And that's, and he did play some linebacker too, but I tell you what, that long snapping, I'm very impressed, Dan, by that. No doubt about it.
Did not have a bad snap at all, Ken.
Never a bad snap.
Never a bad snap in a game, and that's the kind of thing that does get noticed. Long snapper does not get noticed unless you mess that up.
Sure. Yeah. Nobody knows who he is until he screws up. It's like officials, you know. The only time you hear officials' names is when there's a controversy. So there you go, Dan Feltus. Ken Kale here. It's Feltus and Kale. This is our first edition, and there's so many things going on. We want to learn more about Dan's background, but so many things swirling right now. And it looks like, Dan, in the not-too-distant future, like Wednesday, another article of impeachment is going to be introduced into the House of Representatives in Washington. And what do you think about that? I mean, this one is basically, in a nutshell, for inciting violence last week at the Capitol. But what do you think at this, with less than a week now to go in the presidency of Donald Trump, to introduce impeachment once again?
Well, Ken, I first and foremost, what happened last week was devastating to all of us. And for those who respect our constitutional republic, our democracy, the rule of law, respect public service, seeing that unfold, I think made an impact on all of us. And and anyone who incited it or was complicit in it should be held accountable. And so I do think Congress has to do something. It looks like if Mike Pence, Vice President Pence, and the cabinet's not going to invoke the 25th Amendment, that Congress is left with no other choice, Ken, other than the remedy of impeachment. And it's disappointing that it came to this, but Congress has to act. Congress was literally, Ken, invaded. People died, including officers with the Capitol Police. That's not right. And look, you can, the folks who are out there who continue to fan the flames of this, alleged electoral fraud, and those who aren't speaking more forcefully, Ken, it's a problem. And I took a look at the article impeachment that they brought forward. It rests squarely on the incitement of the insurrection. It rests on the allegations, the false allegations of voter fraud around the country. And You know, action needs to be taken. I'm proud of our federal delegation and the leadership they've shown. Senator Hass and Senator Shaheen, Representative Pappas and Representative Custer. And, you know, look, we'll see how the week and weeks unfold. More generally, though, you know, people need to find a way to come together and move
well,
forward.
I certainly agree with that. And I don't think this is the route to coming together. I really don't. I mean, wouldn't a censure be enough? I mean, he could be, President Trump could be censured by the House, correct? I mean, you know, it would leave a black mark, obviously, but and maybe not the impact of impeachment. But do we really want to go through this again with a week to go in his presidency?
I hear you, Ken. And certainly there's that argument out there that what would be the consequence of this? Would this just continue to, you know, add fuel to the fire of what's happening? You know, and certainly there's an argument to that. However, on the flip side, you know, what occurred, you know, merits impeachment without a doubt. The question is, I think no one, and I'm not sure, Ken, you're arguing this either, that it wouldn't merit it. I think the argument that is going on is whether or not it's productive, and shouldn't, you know, and shouldn't something like a censure or something else be, more appropriate.
Yeah. I just don't think, I mean, Joe Biden has talked since he was, president-elect about unifying this country, and you know, Lord knows we need to unify. It's certainly divided as it's ever been, maybe in our history, but at least in our lifetimes anyway. I don't think do you think he really wants to start his presidency in the shadow of an impeachment?
Well, I mean, look, based on the reports that we've seen, you know, there's some suggestion that, you know, if the House goes forward with this week on Wednesday, that the U.S. Senate would take it up potentially later on after the first 100 days. As you know, Ken, the first 100 days critical to getting things done. You know,
well, that's it.
And yeah, so, yeah.
Do you think in 100 days they would, though? I mean, and plus, I mean, you go through and with the majority that the Democrats have in the House, I'm sure the impeachment would go on to the Senate if they want to pursue that. But, you know, you go through the impeachment trial once again of a guy who's, you know, now sitting in Mar-a-Lago playing golf, you know, and I mean, what's the point? Aren't there, you know, in this period of time that we're going through right now with so many things going on, it's just, you know, unbelievable that they would even consider it, I think.
Well, I think, Ken, I think that the argument is, look, they, you know, folks swore an oath to the Constitution. And I think that, Ken, that it's deeply concerning that, even a lot of Republicans are acknowledging that the actions and conduct and statements by President Trump incited that insurrection. And if that does not result in the responsibility to go forward with that recourse, what does? I think is the argument. And I think that that's very credible. But it's also really important, as you know, to think through and continue to think through how, despite the holding folks accountable, how do we bring people together? And some people would argue, I think, Ken, that accountability is part of bringing people together. It's part of the healing process.
Well, I mean, if you, you know, listened to President Trump's speech last Wednesday and read a transcript of it, he did not say anything about, you know, attacking the Capitol building. He invited people to, you know, proceed to the Capitol building and go in peace. So where's the call for insurrection there? I don't get it. I really don't. I think the more volatile remarks may have come earlier from Don Jr. and Rudy Giuliani. You know, but
well, yeah, I don't have it in front of me, Ken, but I think he said, you know, something along the lines of, "We're going to march up to the Capitol and show strength. You have to show strength," or something like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, the phone call with the Georgia Secretary of State, the details of that, and obviously a lot of the comments earlier on, including at these rallies, including in Georgia, leading up to the U.S. Senate runoffs, where John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock won. Those races, Democrats won in Georgia. I mean, the comments that are laid out in the article of impeachment, I think, are, in my view anyways, pretty clear. And so, you know, look, we'll see what happens this week. But we got to find a way, all of us, to move forward. And you may have seen, Ken, too, the report from the FBI that all 50 state capitals potentially will have quote unquote armed protests between now and Biden's inauguration. And so this is something that happened last week. However, you know, this is something like we have to happen last week, but you know, it's ongoing. And look, I think, you know, you heard comments, including from Trump, something along the lines of, "We need to fight like hell or we're not going to have a country," you know, stuff like that. Those kinds of comments and from Rudy Giuliani, for the people who are fired up, Ken, who are, you know, strong Trump supporters, that leads them to the next conclusion. I mean, he doesn't have to specifically say, you know, break a window and go into the Capitol.
I think, you know, and certainly no one condones what happened last Wednesday at the Capitol. I mean, there is no excuse for what happened, and it was a horrible situation, one of the worst in the history of our country. But I think the impeachment is more based on the fact that some Democrats, some, I think, including chiefly among them, Nancy Pelosi, are afraid that Trump in 4 years is going to run again. And well, I think they want to put an end to that possibility.
Well, I'm not sure what the there's certainly that argument. However, impeachment in itself doesn't do that, Ken, in the House. The Senate would have to take a separate to do that. So and whether or not the Senate would do that, I don't know. But to bar somebody from holding federal elected office, impeachment in and of itself doesn't do that. So. Look, we'll see how it unfolds. You know, it's been a turbulent year plus here, Ken, no doubt about it.
And, oh, it has.
And people of different political persuasions, different takes on things. I mean, I think we got to get back to the point in time where we respect one another. And, you know, I think this president, with his name calling and with his derisive, in my view, very, very derisive commentary on a number of groups of people, has taken our politics to the lowest I've ever seen it. And we got to get beyond that. And I think that's hopefully what comes out of this.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of blame to go around. And certainly President Trump is far from blameless. But that being said, I mean, the phony impeachment against him from even before he took office, you know, 95% of the mainstream media or the media in general is anti-Trump. I mean, it's just been 4 years of hell for the Trump administration. It's amazing that they accomplished the things that they were able to accomplish with so much resistance from the left, including most of the news media, which is Dan, you got to figure there are 75 million people out here right now that voted for President Trump in the last election that feel totally disenfranchised by what's taken place over the last 4 years.
Well, I mean, I think that There are a number of people. There's tens of millions of people who voted for the Democratic nominee, Secretary Hillary Clinton, in 2016 that felt disenfranchised by that outcome too. But what we have to do, Ken, is move forward and not perpetuate this voter fraud myth that's happening in other states. So, you know, the things that are coming out of President Trump, you know, since the election, has incited this without a doubt, and it needs to stop. And so if we're going to move forward, if we're going to heal, we got to get beyond that, and there needs to be some element of accountability without a doubt, and not just for President Trump, but for the people who invaded the Capitol. There needs to be accountability.
Oh, there definitely does. There definitely does. I don't disagree with that at all, for sure. But I think in terms of healing for this country, I just don't see where impeachment is a road to healing. That's all. I really don't think it is. We don't want to have to go through this again. We already did it. It was, you know, truly, you know, a phony impeachment ceremony, you know, a procedure the first time. We know that now with what's come out. I just think impeachment is not going to help heal this country. And that's reportedly what and what he said Joe Biden wants to do is heal the country.
Yeah, Ken, I hear you. And I respectfully disagree on the earlier impeachment. I think there was significant merit to it. You know, certainly I read this article and I think there's merit to this one, too. So, what's going on in terms of you mentioned the media. I think that we all admit, and we should, and I've talked about this with Chris Ryan on his show on WKXL, Ken, you may have heard it, you know, I do think the media is a critical pillar of our democracy. And I actually think that could have done a lot better job, quite frankly, in the last few years. I don't think it's particularly biased one way or the other. I do think that covering the tweets of President Trump and covering the behavior, the negative behavior, and then covering people's responses to it, it's an easy way to write up a story. Ken, you know, some person X says something, you know, wild, person Y says something wild in response, but it's not productive to, you know, our democracy and moving forward. And digging into the issues and how they affect people on the ground, working people, families, people here in New Hampshire, that, in my view, is the best kind of reporting. Not, you know, hey, you know, I was listening to Feltus and Kale, and Ken said X, and Dan said Y. You know, who cares? I mean, like, what matters is fundamentally the impact of public service on real people's lives, including public policies. And so adding fuel to that, I think, wasn't really productive over the last few years. But, you know, that's where I have a different, obviously, critique, Ken, in terms of the media over the last few years. More generally, though, they play a critical role in our democracy and continue to. And you may have seen, we talk about how the Capitol was attacked, but reporters who were there covering were attacked too, last week. And so reporters were sacrificing as well for the betterment of our democracy to report on what was transpiring at the Capitol.
We will talk more about this and other issues, Feltus and Kale. It's Maiden Voyage here on 103.9, 1450, yep, and nhtalkradio.com. Welcome back. You asked for more, you got more. Feldis and Kale here on 103.9 1450 NHTalkRadio.com. Ken Kale, Dan Feldis with you. And we're talking about, the media. And, of course, I have to ask you, Dan, did you have a Parler account?
No, I did not.
You did. I didn't either.
You did it?
No.
Well, I do have to give one caveat to your intro to this segment, Ken. When you said you asked for more, you're going to get more. I don't know if that, I think they just had the station on and they're just listening to us now. But
no. They hang on our every word, Dan.
Every word they hang on.
So just be careful. But so we talk about Parler because they've been banned from all the platforms. I guess I don't have a Parler account, so it really didn't impact me. But isn't it scary that high tech now, big tech, has more impact on our lives than the federal government?
Well, I think there's a couple of things there. In terms of our information and our security, our private information, I actually teamed up with Representative Neil Kirk, a libertarian Republican, when I was a couple of years ago to try to prohibit the selling of your private internet information to other companies, your browser information, all that other stuff, which actually is sold. Prohibit that without the express written consent of
the Boston Red Sox. Oh, no.
There you go. You got it.
Yeah. Now go ahead.
And that got defeated because, the big tech companies really lobbied against it.
Of course.
I think this thing going on, Ken, right now, with Twitter and some of these other technology companies, what you see is there is a pretty broad exception to the First Amendment for activity that incites violence and affects security. And so that's pretty clear from the case law, U.S. Supreme Court, and otherwise. So ultimately, these decisions to do that, I think, are consistent with that. If there's activity that's inciting violence and insurrection, and I think it is appropriate to try to curb that.
But it seems as if these companies that are banning President Trump and some other conservatives are letting terrorists still spew their dialogue on and their diatribes on Twitter and other platforms. But it's very, very selective.
Yeah, I'm not entirely certain about who's been banned and who hasn't. But certainly when you look at the events of the last week, I think everyone is reacting and trying to take steps to fulfill what they see as their responsibility to public health, safety, and security. And, I think there's probably certainly going to be examples of users of these different platforms who have engaged in different rhetoric over the years that people find offensive and wonder why that person hasn't been impacted or not. I get that. However, I think what we're seeing is a direct response to the events of last week.
So impeachment aside, because, Donald Trump may be impeached in the House, and there could be a Senate trial within 100 days after Joe Biden takes office. What is going to become of Donald Trump in your mind, Dan, after it's all said and done?
Oh boy, I don't know. I mean,
well, Jeopardy's looking for a host, so I don't know.
Yeah, right. I don't know, Ken, I'm more concerned, and I think we're all more concerned with what's going to happen to us as a country. as a state, society, democracy? How are we going to move forward? The way that you and I just talked about earlier, making sure that we move forward together. I think those debates and discussions are more important than what may or may happen to Donald Trump.
I just wonder what he's going to do on inauguration day. That's what I'm
Yeah, he said
about.
he's not going to be there, so
Yeah,
I think that's
yeah.
a. I actually think that's a good thing.
Yeah,
But
he won't be at the inauguration, but where will he be? That's what I'm wondering about.
probably golfing.
Probably so. It remains to be seen. I guess the indications are anyway that Vice President Pence will be at the inauguration.
Yeah, I saw some reports about that, and it sounded like former presidents will be there too, which is custom, and so that's good. And certainly there's reports of elevated security, which is appropriate in light of the events of last week. And my hope is it goes smoothly, and certainly the co-chair of Biden's transition team has indicated that they have every confidence that it will. So hopefully that's the case, Ken. And we have, this fairly significant bump in this transition of power last week. Hopefully moving forward, we don't see some of the same things.
Do you think the fact that Congress has a Democratic majority, and now the Senate is 50-50 with Kamala Harris having the deciding vote in case of ties. Do you think that's a good thing for the Biden administration?
Well, I mean, if you look at the priorities, in terms of jobs, infrastructure, on energy, combating climate change, on healthcare, those majorities, I think, are going to be critical to advancing a lot of the agenda. I mean, some of that's going to be bipartisan. Hopefully, most of it is. But we'll see. And so I think ultimately, yes, it will be. I do think that in terms of getting things done that President Biden has laid out, unfortunately, to the extent that there isn't bipartisan cooperation, that could continue to foster an element of divisiveness. But at the end of the day, and I've always said it, look, you do your best, you reach out, you work with people. Ken, that's what I did in the legislature for three terms, state Senate as majority leader, working with people. You're not always going to agree, but you try.
That's true.
You give it a shot. You do some give and take. Sometimes you get at the end of the day and you put together a package and no one's happy, but that's okay. You get things done. Sometimes you get at the end of the day and there's a lot of give and take, and ultimately each side says, I don't know if this is it's going a little too far for me. And that's okay. And then you debate it. But I think, the sort of the name calling and the derisiveness that we've seen from President Trump directed towards people, I don't think that's productive at all for democracy. And I think we got to get back to basic facts, too, Ken. And I think this president is devoid of facts. It's one thing to say he has a cavalier attachment to the truth. I don't even think he has that. I don't think there's any attachment to the truth, in my view, Ken. And it's one thing to say, all right, well, Ken has this view, Dan has this view. All right, that's fine. But the underlying foundation of facts, we should probably all just agree on. Just basic facts, and then spring from there about your arguments about what's best to get something done. And so I'm hopeful that President Biden's, priorities make its way through. I think they'll be good for the country and good for New Hampshire.
Do you think the Biden-Harris ticket is one that can unify the country?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you've seen, including the speeches from President Biden, President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris, when it was declared that they had won the presidency and vice presidency, were remarks of a healing nature. They weren't spiking the football. They were talking about moving forward and bringing people together. And I think that's the tone that President-elect Biden has struck. He continues to talk about he'll be a president for you, whether you voted for him or not. And I firmly believe that he will look out for everybody. You're not going to agree with everything he does, no doubt. Not everybody does. That's democracy. But fundamentally, the question is, when you go in, you sign up for this, you're serving the public, you're serving everybody. And you are accepting the fact that people will criticize you for policies that you support, and that's part of what it's all about. But not taking it personally, and instead focusing on the bigger goals of getting things done, I think is where President-elect Biden excelled in the U.S. Senate, and I think that's how he'll excel as a president as well.
Democrats across the country took quite a hit, really, in this last election. In the House, there were many gains by Republicans. And look at New Hampshire, how now the House is controlled by Democrats, the Senate, by Republicans, I should say, and the Senate is controlled by Republicans as well. That flip-flopped as well. What, were you surprised that took place?
Well, look, if you look at it, everybody's looking at it differently, but if you look at the numbers, Ken, as compared to the last presidential election, 2016, they're pretty much the same. In New Hampshire, anyways, Democrats won at the federal level in 2016, lost at the state level. The state Senate was 14 to 10 Republican in 2020. It was 14 to 10 Republican in 2016. There's actually less Republicans in the state house than there is in 2016, but it also was Republican. So, and the popular vote for Democrats in the state Senate was about the same as it was in 2016. So, I think what you saw in terms of the down ballot was something very similar to what happened in 2016 in New Hampshire. I think it remains to be seen what kind of dynamic moving forward in terms of 2022 and midterm elections. But there is some truth to the notion that President Trump brought out a fair amount of Republicans and quite frankly, new Republicans, or people who don't identify as Republicans but were voting for President Trump and then voting Republican at a minimum down ballot, sometimes splitting their ticket for Senator Shaheen and others, but for the most part voting Republican. So I think that was the dynamic that you saw at play. And what do you think, Ken? What do you think explains the results?
Well, I think you put it well. I think it was the Trump factor. I really and truly do. But we have to take a break. One more quick segment left. Feltus and Kale right here, 1039 1450 NHTalkRadio.com. Feltus and Kale wrapping it up for our first edition. It's been a lot of fun. It's been very informative. And we may disagree on some things, but we'll get along. Dan, are you planning
Dan.
Another political run? Are you going to run for anything in the future?
In the future of my entire life, I don't know. The
Okay.
honest answer is I don't know, Ken. I mean, look, Aaron and I and the girls got away COVID friendly. Took some time, reassessing and regrouping. And obviously, I believe strongly in public service. As I mentioned, public service takes many different forms, not just running for elected office. And we're seeing it with our frontline workers. We're seeing it with others. So we'll see.
A definite maybe from Dan Feldes. Feldes and Kale. Join us again on WKXL.
Take care.